Blog Talk Radio. Sophia, divine, all blessed, peace and love, joy and prosperity. You are listening now live to the Divine Prince, Pan-African spiritualist, practitioner, author, and advisor, Udu Ubeya Bokur, sharing with you in all things spiritual, mystical, metaphysical, cosmic, universal, evolutionary, revolutionary, healing, and holistic, from a Pan-African hoodoo world spiritualist perspective, understanding that all is indeed a blessing. If you can just see beyond the veil, for it is all just an illusion and a test, one of the greatest divine mysteries of this life cycle. This is my constant prayer, my mantra, affirmation, reverberation, reiteration, and my ever-living reality. It is crucial to the very foundation of my understanding, my teaching, my walk, and my work along this divine, all-blessed life path and journey. It is how I, the Divine Prince, make sense out of all that we are challenged with here in our daily existence on Mother, Father, Earth, and it is my personal place of power and understanding, the place from where I began and the place from where I realize and crystallize all endeavor, understanding that I and I alone create and co-create my divine destiny, and I alone create and co-create my divine, all-blessed reality. And so it is. Ashe. Today is Ifa Wednesday, Osa Obatala, October 24, 2012. And you are now listening to the Divine Prince, along with my co-host, Baba Obafemi Orgunwa. And this is Ifa Wednesdays on Power Lunch, Hoodoo, New Orleans Voodoo Secrets and Recipes. My live listen-in and call-in number is area code 347-215-8967. When you are ready with your question, comment, or request, do press the number 1 on your telephone keypad, and we will most certainly assist you moving forward. I do need to quickly send up a warning that I have not paid my Blog Talk Radio premium, and we may be cut off early in the show. Hopefully that doesn't happen. Usually it doesn't happen, but it is a possibility. So I just wanted to send that out there. Baba is present with me. Your line is open. I had a chance to go into your site today and really, particularly the downloads, look at the lifestyles, the Yoruba environmentalism, the Iwe Orisha. I was really, really overwhelmed by the dedication and the time that you've taken for each of these categories within your site and your overall purpose for why you're even doing it in the first place. I was led there by the collaborative change, promotion partners and collaborative change. And then from there, I began to, go through the site and look at the various other things that you had there. I was really, really impressed. I've never seen Orisha lifestyle, to use your coined phrase, presented in such a way and with such clarity, without any ambiguity or mystery, if you will. It's just right there for you to grasp and understand. And I certainly appreciate it. I hope you received my email.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Please tell us more about what you're doing there.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you. It's sort of a... I feel like it's my duty, and I project that out onto the greater community, whether for good or not. So I apologize if anybody feels like I'm doing too much. But I really have seen how Orisha lifestyle, you know, is beneficial to people, and I believe what W.E.B. Du Bois said many years ago when he said that Africa has something to teach the world. The world has something to teach Africa, and Africa has something to teach the world. And I believe that the most crystallized articulation of what Africa has to share with the world is quite honestly Orisha lifestyle. And I don't say that in a sort of a superior kind of an attitude that, oh, yeah, well, we're better than you. But, you just can see it in the diaspora, for example. The clarity that you see Orisha expressed in Trinidad and Haiti, in Brazil, in Cuba, under the most extreme situations, I mean, it ought not be there, but it's there, and it's very, very clear. So it has resilience, it has flexibility, it has relevance, it adds value to our lives. It's something that people are carrying on even after they have been in their home countries for 500 years, and they come to New York or L.A. or San Francisco, they continue to perpetuate it. You know, I work with some Cuban refugees who have been imprisoned. You know, if you're a Cuban born person and you commit a crime, and there's this special jail system for them, they don't just, you know, go to regular jail because they're sort of under the jurisdiction of the INS. But so those people had a special halfway house, and I worked with those guys, and I'm going to tell you, people who have been in jail for half their lives, they've been in jail half their lives, they still had Orisha. And as soon as they got to the halfway house, they would ask me, where can I find Orisha? Where can I go and listen to the drums? Where can I go and find a babalawo? No lie. These are guys who are, by our definition, criminals. And so, it's, you know, I've seen it is what I'm trying to say. I've seen it. It's real and it's tangible. And so the value is real, but the crusade dimension of it, where I really feel like there's a higher level of urgency, is where we start to build a more holistic understanding of what the Orisha lifestyle is, and as it pertains to how we spend money, how we raise families, how we interact with the living environment, in the contradictions from our cultural experience as Americans have to be addressed and sorted out so that we can understand that, okay, my American culture is running counter to my culture as a devotee of Shango or Obatala or Ogun, and I need to figure out a way to balance this out. And so the Orisha Lifestyle Agreements is about simplifying that process, making it, like you said, very simple, very clear, right there, low-hanging fruit, easy thing that you can do, small adjustments that you can make in your life that will make you more aligned with your bigger purpose.
And the experience for me personally that I felt, if I can be metaphoric, was almost like a sieve, a funnel. It's like I was being led to a particular place and understanding. And you sort of implied that in what you just said. So I'm going to ask it directly. So by following this plan, this program, you know, adapting Orisha lifestyle in its fullness, would you agree then that it would be impossible to not make some serious changes, to come to some crossroads, if you will, in terms of our lifestyle, our segmented lifestyles here in America in particular, where people have, you know, community identity and their at-home identity and their workplace identity. I know that often in the request that I get, there's that conflict with how do I do what I know the Spirit is telling me to do and still operate within the system. Again, whether that's at work or not at work. For me, it meant I had to come out of the system. For me, and the Orishas led me along that path. The skills, the gifts, the talents, were there, but I needed to be shown how to think of them in a different way. And again, in my experience working with other people, that's often my job, is to get people to see what they have, but see it in a very different kind of way.
And if we can see it differently, then we have a much greater opportunity to behave and respond to it differently. And I agree with your assessment that, yes, if you follow this line of thinking and behavior, then you will change. You will. It is designed to, if you imagine an hourglass, at the top of the hourglass, you know, the Orisha lifestyle begins you at awareness, raising your awareness, increasing your awareness, amplifying what you know and understand about the state of affairs. And then gradually it works you into that funnel. You described it perfectly. It works you down that funnel of the hourglass right down to the point of action. And it allows you to make a small strategic actions that you know are going to make an impact on your life, on the lives of the ones you love and serve, as on your money, on the environment, and on your spiritual consciousness. So in a small action, it could be just a simple thing that you're going to do, but you know that one impact, one thing is going to impact many things, or it's going to impact those specific things. And then from there, it funnels back out the bottom of the hourglass, and it starts to create change. Because you start to improve, you start to make a more meaningful contribution to your life and to the lives of the people around you and to your environment. And then the environment starts to respond to you and say, hey, we like that. We need that. You're the go-to person. And and by doing that, now you have brought people into your kind of a vortex, and now they're changing with you. And so you have gone and become two people and eight people and 40 people and 100 people. And much like, you know, what's happening on this show, you continue to gather momentum and you continue to expand and grow and change. And other people change along with you.
Absolutely. For me, and I can see how the outside observer might miss it. But for me, this is my journey. Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, you know, Twitter, this is my journey. And I often refer to it as a public diary. It's your diary. Mm-hmm. You post what you want. You talk about what you want. You focus on what you want. But you share it with the world voluntarily. So I'm often caught in a conflict in that arena, in terms of my responsibility to teach, to educate, to guide, to explain, to go into detail, when in reality it's just an extension of my lifestyle, what I'm thinking about when I get up in the morning or at any point of the day. And I present that in the public forum that is Facebook. Now, what I do within my ministry is different. Then I have a responsibility. You don't give somebody a pot with no instructions, you know, with no teaching, with no foundation, with no education. There I recognize my responsibility. So I went to Spirit about this because it is a sort of a conflict, Baba, for me. As you know, I've been really immersed in the Agun thing right now in this season. And sort of to mirror what you said, if I'm doing too much, I apologize. But I know where Spirit is taking me. So I'm sharing a part of my own research while I'm studying, while I'm looking, while I'm examining, while I'm applying, you know, what I've been taught, what's been given to me, to what I'm seeing, and then reinterpreting that in my own way. That's sort of the framework that I see presented in how you do Orisha Lifestyles, for lack of better wording. And I really appreciate that.
medicine. Living the medicine is where it's at. I think that that's the only way that we're gonna make sense of this. In large part because it's something that we as African Americans, we've always known. I mean, we're going full circle in the sense that we had a particular kind of an experience wherein, for the most part, the specific terms and rituals and all these, you know, the tangible dimensions of Orisha lifestyle were prohibited, right? So you couldn't do it. But the essence of it cannot, you know, it like I said, it's resilient, it's flexible. And so Orisha lifestyle is like water. Orisha is like water. It's in our blood. And if the container is going down a mountainside, then we're going to take the form of the mountainside. If it's in a flat little savanna and it's, you know, there's the lay of the land, you know, moves it left and right, it's going to go left and right. And when the waterfall comes, it's going to be, you know, it's going to fall down the waterfall. Here in the United States, it became extremely sublime, very, 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 very subtle. And it's something that we have within our expression without being able to articulate it as such. But we can see by the accomplishments that we have achieved here in the United States, for example, that whereas in some places maybe they excelled in drumming, okay? They took that dimension of the Orisha consciousness and they became excellent drummers. That's not all they did, but, you know, it came to a real high point there. Well, we became excellent in something else. We became excellent in communication. We became excellent in creating infrastructure. We became excellent as leaders and directors and organizers. So you have someone like a Colin Powell. You can't, you know what I mean? There's no equivalent of a Colin Powell anywhere else in the world. There's a person like a Barack Obama. There's no equivalent to a Barack Obama. I mean, well, Barack Obama is from a different lineage, but you know, he's got the sort of honorary status and the influence from cutting his teeth with us here on the ground in Chicago and wherever else he was developing. But we have people who are very, 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 very exceptional, inordinately exceptional in everything that we do, whatever we touch. And so now we have that as our way of being. It's natural to us. It's natural. Excellence, primacy, really distinguished and you know what I mean, these kinds of contributions that we make, it's part of how we move. And so we have to take advantage of that as we move towards reintegrating the specific language of Orisha lifestyle, reintegrating the rituals of Orisha lifestyle. We don't have to forget everything we know and who we are in the process of learning the liturgy and the ritual and the ceremony of Orisha. That's what I'm trying to say. The strength that we have is in the lifestyle. It's already there. Part of the problem that we're suffering from, or the limitations, is that we don't embrace the elements of our lifestyle as our strengths. You know, we've kind of fallen into this habit of looking outside of ourselves. I think the integration experience had a lot to do with that. It said to us, we have to look outside of ourselves to validate our power. We have to look into the mainstream culture to validate our beauty, validate our creativity, to validate our intelligence, to validate our religion. Everything has to be validated by going and doing it in this arena now. Now it's really good because you can do it at MIT. Well, no, not really. When you were doing it at Howard, it was good too. You know? So I think we carry over that same kind of mentality as we move into Orisha. Well, if you really want to be good, you got to do it exactly like the Cubans. You got to do it exactly like the Brazilians. You got to do it. Not really. Not really. They have a culture. You don't have to follow the culture. You do have to follow the rules of the religion, the protocol that says first step, second step, third step, fourth step. But that doesn't mean you got to become a Brazilian. You don't have to be dancing samba and going to carnival. You don't have to be, you know, doing what the Nigerians do, you know. So those are cultural things that are different from the ritual and ceremonial things. And so I've kind of covered a lot of space and went this way and that way, but I hope that the idea is still clear enough to know that we have the essence of it, which is the lifestyle. That's who we are, and that's the power. And we need to continue to develop that and cultivate the strength of the lifestyle as we relearn what the specific rules and origins of that lifestyle are.
I so agree. As you know, and many of the listeners know, I'm in the preparation right now of sewing and preparing my suit for Mardi Gras. I'm actually doing two. One I'm making and one is already made and created, and it's coming from Nigeria by way of a museum here in the States. And one of the things I like about Baba, and one of the reasons that I have him on the show, is that we don't agree on everything, and it gives me some room to grow and to develop a different opinion about certain things. But as I go through that process and the study of that, I find many of those similarities, those symbols, those processes, as you just said, already exist here. Mardi Gras culture and the Indian culture and masking is a very complex thing. It's often passed down through lineage, through family. Even the processes by way of how you make the garments. All crews do not make their garments in the same way. All crews don't bead the same way. All costumes I really don't like that word costume, but all suits are not created equal in that regard. So I think it is important that we focus on the details and learn the processes and become a part of the system, but to also reawaken our own connection to that which we already have. And as you so eloquently put it, the behavior, the symbolism, the metaphors, the meaning is already here. That could not have been taken from us. That could not have been raped from us, if you will, through slavery and Jim Crow and oppression and all the blocks that were put into place to keep us from connecting to spirit in that way. But again, once your third eye is open and you're really in a place to receive that level of understanding, you begin to see the synchronicity of traditional African and indigenous culture and demonstration, wherever it is now found in the world. I've even been reaching out to a Sogbo in terms of how I go about this process. And their response has even been amazing to me in terms of their ability to accept change, particularly in a way that I didn't expect. You know, you expect a very traditional, hardcore, orthodox kind of approach, particularly when you start going back to the root of a system. But to find the ancestors in agreement and are pushing for the change, for the very survival of all the tradition, I think it's something that we need to really reexamine and re-look at. These are not dead systems. These are not dead languages. These are not dead cultures, as some would try and convince us that they are. They're very much alive and running through our veins. And it's our responsibility. That's where our responsibility comes into play, to really actively do the work to reconnect those dots, to reform those connections to the past, but also to bring that into the present so that it will survive into the future.
Yes. Survivability.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that, you know, that survivability is the strong point of the culture. It really is so flexible and can bend so much, you know, but it's strong, and that's a key point of evolution. The ones who are most capable of anticipating change and responding to change are the ones that evolve, you know, and the ones that resist change are the ones that suffer and eventually perish. And that's, you know, that's just what we're deliberately having to avoid. I think on the other side of the equation, we have to focus on not allowing there to be sort of breaks and cracks and address the weak points so that we can not only survive but thrive. That, you know, that to me is the other part of the equation. I see that we have this wonderful opportunity to thrive and to do better than ever. Theoretically, we should be doing better than ever right now. We should be just enjoying unprecedented opportunities, but we're externalizing that. We're funneling it out. I think in a couple of the shows before, I was thinking about Claude Anderson and something that I learned from him recently, which was the rate at which we turn over money within our community. The Asian community is something like 26 times the money turns over before it goes out. And the Jewish community, is like 26 times, and then the Asians, it's about 13 times. And the Hispanic community is 6 times, and the African-American community is once. But we are something like $5 billion strong. I mean, $5 billion, we bring down $5 billion every year. And so it's like, why are we suffering with unemployment? Well, it's because we walked out on entrepreneurship. We look to other people to employ us. When we have all this talent and skill, why aren't we entrepreneurs? Why aren't we setting up businesses in our own communities? That would address half of the unemployment right there. We'd be employing ourselves and one another. You know, all the services that we're clamoring for and looking for other people to solve. Oh, there's violence in the community. There's this in the community. There's that in the community. Yes, those are problems, but why is it assumed that someone else is going to address those problems? Why is that our first thought, that we're going to go march over on this and march on that and protest that because someone else isn't handling our problems? It's our problem. We have the skill to handle that problem. We have the resources to handle that problem. Why aren't we handling that problem? You know, and I think those are the points where, you know, the contradiction has to be redirected to say, okay, look, some of this stuff you already have in your pocket, you just need to be willing to put it on the table and share the problem with other people and then share the solution with other people. And it's that circular, inward-facing kind of a mentality that I think Orisha Lifestyle also, it invites us to partake in. But we have to close the loop on that and complete the circle by actually doing the work, doing the simple or playing the game even, you know. We've got to play the game with one another in order for this thing to really fly and for us to take advantage of this great opportunity, because when I think about Orisha Lifestyle in terms of communications, and just for example, I'm sorry to go on. This is, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, if I wanted to know anything about Orisha, oh, my goodness, I would have to get on a plane and go to Nigeria. If I wanted to know anything, there were only maybe 4 or 5 books max.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The internet didn't even exist. And so if I learned the language, forget it. I used to go and sit in. I took a class about 16 years ago with an Igbo man who was teaching an unofficial Yoruba class on Saturdays at USC. And there were probably about 5 or 6 people who would come. And, you know, we would sit in on this class, and the Igbo man would teach us Yoruba. If there was a janitor, if there was anybody who spoke Yoruba or who was from Nigeria, man, you would have to run them down and just say, tell me anything. That was mm-hmm. the only thing, that's the only contact you could get.
And they were often today, in shock that we even wanted to know. Because we're not that far in age, and I was in California during that season also. In fact, I studied with him, Mhunzi, and they were shocked that we even wanted to know, you know, that we cared to want to know
right.
the language, the culture, the traditions.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in agreement there.
Mm-hmm. And now here we are. We can get on the phone. We can chat. We got, Facebook alone presents us this. We can do so much. We can be
mm-hmm.
bringing products and merchandise in by the boatload, literally, over here. We can be bringing master teachers here and setting up entire tours. We can be sending our own, the internal masters, from one city to another easily. We can be setting up huge conferences, task forces. I mean, we can have a network of Orisha midwives. I'm sure there are at least 1,000 women who are at some level or another in Orisha lifestyle who are midwives. I'm certain of it. I'm sure there are at least 500. I can say this without doubt. There are 500 doctors in the United States of America who are fully initiated. I know it. I mean medical doctors. There are 500 lawyers. There are 500 policemen, firemen, school teachers, counselors, social workers. Why aren't we networking these people? Why aren't we taking advantage of this huge opportunity to build a real, authentic community? Those are the missing links. Those are the big, giant gaps that I see we have to fill in order for this thing to really make sense, and that's to grow, and actually make our contribution. I sincerely believe that that the world is waiting for us. The world is waiting for us to step up to greatness, as Dr. Nobles would say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make it happen on the scale that we can make it happen.
Yeah, I think scale, that word is critical to what we're dealing with right now. As we
mm-hmm.
turn the conversation towards some of the answers, some of the solutions, it's being done here. It's being done in New Orleans. But
mm-hmm.
Louisiana is the second poorest state in the nation, and not that very big of a city in comparison to other places. So we're constantly seeking people outside of our community to sponsor the traditions, to
mm-hmm.
support the traditions, to perform, to teach, and we are doing that networking. We just had a group come back from Nigeria.
Mm.
I'm in daily contact with Baba
mm.
in Nigeria, as you said, because of Facebook. So
mm-hmm.
we don't really have any excuses. I think we're dealing with something psychological, something spiritual, something emotional,
mm.
something that has to do with belief, I find that in my daily travels, our people still don't even believe that this can be done, even though it's being demonstrated every single day. We see people that are successful in business. We see people that are leaving workforce and becoming self-employed and doing it successfully. I know for me, a part of my plan, I didn't wake up one day and decide I was going to become self-employed. You know, I got a diagnosis that made me permanently disabled. So I had to change my lifestyle. And I knew that getting by on Social Security was not going to help. You know, it was not going to be, you know, beneficial. So I had to go to my community. I had to go to other people in order to survive, in order to make my living. You sort of were laying out a plan as you were talking. I don't know if you were doing it intentionally or if it was spirit, but you talked about importing. You talked about co-opting. You talked about sharing and putting some of what you have on the table to benefit others. You know, what I do on Keen, on Live Persons, on Desto, the readings that I do online, all of that resource is channeled back into my community. And ask anyone in my community. You know, there are people on my Facebook who have come down here who have seen it. They've been in my house. They'll tell you Divine Prince doesn't have a car. Divine Prince don't have furniture. All Divine Prince has is altars and a computer. And I'm sleeping on a futon. And all the resources that I get, I'm paying my membership dues at Ashe. I'm paying into Congo Square Preservation Society. I'm paying into younger people who are coming up who are going into music. We have a lot of young people here in New Orleans who are in music. You can just walk down Canal Street, one of the major boulevards here, and five kids are going to ask you for some money and have a CD in their hand. And often I take that opportunity to tell them, you know, there's a bigger way to do what you're doing. You know, you're out here pretty much panhandling with a product. You know, you don't have to beg people for money. You've got a product in your hand. But they don't know how to market that. They don't know how to share that. They don't know how to get the word out that I have something that may be of use to you. Where do we meet in the middle? So.
Yeah.
I would like for us to look at some solutions in a little greater detail. And again, I go back to belief. Many of our people still don't believe it can be done. And just, you know, we can see it in the comments. You know, every time someone posts, you know, one of those Facebook comments about, you know, if you're on Facebook, you know, you're not working, you're not doing anything, you know, if you want to be successful, the first thing you do is unplug your computer. I always feel compelled to send them a private message and let them know that I'm not here wasting my time, beloved. My bills are being paid because I'm on Facebook. But they don't understand how that's being done. You know, and I'm doing it without the ad. I'm doing it without spamming people. You know, I'm doing it without begging, you know, every day for something from people. So how do we address that? The belief, changing the mindset that we don't have to do what's been given to us to do and that it can be replaced with something just as beneficial, if not more beneficial, that we have autonomy and control over. How do we teach that?
Well, you know, that is, I think, first best taught by doing, and other people who are doing it will know. That's one thing for sure. I know you've already seen that. There's a lot of people who don't understand. And they will assume that because they're on Facebook playing, that you're on Facebook playing. They'll assume that, for example, there's two people in a nightclub, right? Well, one person is just trying to pick up people. One is a performer, and the other person is just out there dancing. Now, the dancer is just out there entertaining himself. But the performer on the stage is there because she's getting paid. So the other people who are there who are getting paid are going to recognize the performer. And they're going to be analyzing, look at this. She's up here. She's a headliner. She's only got 2-3 people in the band. I know that she was in Las Vegas yesterday. She's in L.A. tomorrow. She's in San Francisco after that. They're doing the math. You know, small entourage, that means only paying X number of dollars for this. Oh, I need to talk to her because I have something that, in what I do, I can add some value to her program. Now, they're going to have that kind of a conversation, right? We're going to be talking about things on a different kind of a level than the people who are just there entertaining themselves. And it's not a judgment, but that's just the reality of the situation. In the market, there's some people who are selling and there's some people who are buying. So the more we're able to get out there and keep doing what we're doing effectively, the other people who are doing it are going to recognize it and say, hey, let's collaborate. I have something to add to you and you have something to add to me. And if they're ready and they're in a position to do so and the timing is right, then one person becomes two. Two people become six.
Let me jump in there, Bob. Let me jump in. So you're suggesting then that people need to first be able to see.
Yes.
If you can't see where the blessing is, if you can't see the opportunity, if you don't even know what you're looking for, to see the opportunity, you know, then maybe that's a starting place for many.
Yes. Where we look determines what we will see. Where we look determines what we will see. And what we see will shape our perception. And what we perceive will shape our expectations. And then what we expect will shape what we actually experience. And it reinforces itself over and over again. So some of the people who are just looking at entertainment, that's what they're going to experience, and they're going to stay in that loop of just, you know, sort of entertainment. But then other people are going to be looking at progress and value, and they're going to increase on that level. And that, I think that's okay. It doesn't require sort of a everybody isn't the same, right? If I tell us there's a small inner circle of doers, surrounding that circle are the supporters, and then surrounding that circle are the observers, and you know, so there are more observers than there are supporters, and there are more supporters than there are doers. But if you can get all of the doers in one place and to agree to do one thing, then that's going to draw exponentially large numbers of people who will support and observe. Case in point, right here where I am in Oakland, I'm in an area called Fruitvale, which is primarily Hispanic. I'd say 70% Mexican and then, you know, maybe Guatemalan and others. But this is approaching the Day of the Dead, right? Day of the Dead, that's basically like their Veterans Day or their Egungun Festival. Well, they're going to have in the train station, in the parking lot of the train station, they're going to have a big Day of the Dead festival with over 80 altars to the ancestors. 80 altars to the ancestors. Now, these are Catholic people. Right? These are not ancestor worshiping. Their whole religious program has nothing to do with ancestors. But on Day of the Dead, they're going to have over 80 altars to the ancestors in the parking lot of the train station. Okay? Big public ceremony. Why are they able to do that? Because they've done that. They've completed that circle. They've gone the full loop to find out who can add what to the circle. And they brought it to the table, and they made those agreements with one another, and it's going to be beneficial to all of the concerned parties. But they're able to see, you know, Now, the masses of people are just going to go, and they're going to walk through the altars, and they're going to leave a flower or, you know, eat a cookie or whatever they're going to do. But there are, you know, you can see that circle of observers and supporters and doers. The doers are the ones who are actually going to set up the program. That's a small number of people, probably 10, 15 people who are actually coordinating it and organizing it and assigning spaces, et cetera, et cetera. But we have that capacity. We absolutely have that capacity. It's just a question of, you know, reaching out and taking those chances on one another, one by one, two by two, four by four, and 10 by 10.
Yeah, it's definitely crucial that we come out of the closet, so to speak, particularly when we find solutions that work. There's some component to this system here in America that teaches us that we need to sort of covet our success. When we find an answer, you by all means don't share that answer to sort of in order to protect, you know, your own investment, if you will. And that
right.
is not traditional African, nor is it conducive to a racial lifestyle.
No.
You were saying a few minutes ago, you were talking about something. It escapes me now. But the gist of it that I got out of it was that everyone has a role. When we look at the division of labor, when we look at traditional and to a great degree modern African culture, everyone has a role. Everyone is not Babalawo. Everyone is not Awo. Everyone is not, you know, the medicine man. You know, you have to have seamstress, tailors, cooks,
right?
You know, people who grow, who produce things. So we all have an opportunity for successful, independent growth in terms of how we view finances and how we view our career choices here in America without surrendering a racial lifestyle, without compromising and compartmentalizing, I think is a better word, because we tend to compartmentalize here in terms of religion and culture and income. You know, I would say, 90% of people make their income doing something that they have no connection to, you know, might not even use, you know, themselves, you know. It's just an income. So it's critical that we figure out what it is that we have. And I often suggest putting that on paper, putting it somewhere where you can see it. Things become more real when you can see them. It's an illusion, but things become more real when you can see them. So I always start by putting it on paper and then sharing that idea in your community, friends, other people who are already in business, and find out where the needs are, what's not being done, you know, what can be enhanced. And I think we all have an opportunity for that. An idea that I've been sort of floating around in my head but don't really have the income for or the even the credit for is mobile produce. You know, even here in the South, we still have ice cream trucks, you know, and particularly in more ethnic, if you excuse the expression, communities like mine, where we have Haitians and Hondurans and Guatemalans and African Americans and Creoles all on one block, we might get 8 or 9 ice cream trucks every day. But I'm always surprised at what is not on those trucks. And my idea would be produce, mobile produce. And many of the neighborhoods that you see these trucks in are the neighborhoods that do not have the grocery stores, or only had the corner stores owned by people outside of our community who are selling items that don't particularly feed our well-being, you know, chips and cookies and junk, you know. But
yes.
Mobile produce, you know, gardeners, home gardeners. Now, we do have a lot of home gardening here in New Orleans. A lot of natural produce grows in New Orleans. Bananas just sprout up in your yard here. Mangoes sprout up in your yard here. But no one is organizing that. And I noticed this first in California. You know, I lived in California for 8 years. And I noticed what was missing to me was live produce in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
First thing I noticed was the lack of grass, especially in L.A. No one had grass. And then I saw these palm trees with no fruit. And then I started thinking about, but isn't this the bread basket of the country? Isn't California one of the big food producers? So why isn't that food in the neighborhood? Why is it behind a fence on some corporate farm somewhere? So when I moved here, my mind was already looking for that. That was one of the reasons I moved south. And, man, it's everywhere. I can list 8 different fruits right now that I can walk to in my neighborhood that only the birds are eating. You know, it might be an abandoned mansion that hasn't been inhabited in decades, and it's still got fruit trees on it. It's still got herb plants on it growing wild. And if we could get, you know, an ice cream truck or two in some of these communities, and someone out there is listening to me, you got some credit. You got a few $1,000s in your bank account. I give you this as a gift. Do this.
Yes.
I'm telling you, Old Damari has already told me that this is a blessed plan. And drive that produce, those fruits, those vegetables to these neighborhoods. That will bring a wealth of abundance to the community, not only in nutrition, but in its ability to teach profitability, how we can take our skills, a few products, and really build something from it. I became self-employed first with $25 in incense. That's how I started. Stick in a bottle of oil. I only had one fragrance. I got it from, the name slips me right now, Leimert Park. Dawa Bookstore, that's right, Dawa Bookshop. And I took that. And the profit from that, and I went back, and then I had 2 fragrances, and then it was 5 fragrances, and then I was crocheting crowns and kufis, and it just continued to grow. But you can get locked into that vending lifestyle. And I was still constantly struggling, and what I wasn't doing was connecting with the community at a deeper level where I could, you know, stock my products in someone else's store and let them sell the product and just come and pick up my money every week, you know, and then spend that time doing something else, somewhere else, or someone else would bring greater profitability to myself, but to the community. So as you said, these opportunities are there for us. They're present. We've got to learn to think out of the box, and we've got to see and be able to see opportunity where other people only see complaint. And we see a lot of that also in social networking, you know, this environment of complaint. You know, it's their thing to get up every day with the newest complaint, but no one's providing any answers.
Yes. You know, Stephen Covey has some great insights on that, where he calls it being a trim tabber, and the trim tab is a small rudder on the rudder of a ship, and so you know the rudder is what pushes the massive amounts of water, you know, one way or the other, but then it's the trim tab that allows the ship to make a sharper turn. You know, it's a really small piece on the end of the rudder. And when we position ourselves that way, because it's all about positioning, to really just do what's necessary to help the big thing happen, you know, it focuses our activities. You know, we're not trying to drive the ship and handle the food on the ship and coordinate people's jobs on the ship and. Nope. All I do is I'm this little small part right here. That's all I do. And I let everybody else do what they do, but I'm gonna fulfill my little small role, understanding how it's going to impact all of these other dimensions of the movement. And I think that's what I'm hearing you describe. And you know, look at the problem. Okay, I hear this is a problem. I hear that's a problem. I hear the other's a problem. And then figure out, what can I do? What small part can I do to address this thing? You know, because I can't do everything. I can't be everything to everybody. But you know what I can do? I can do this. I love to do this. I'm actually really good at doing this. Do it. You know, find out how it needs to be done and do it. It's something that is sanctioned by Olo Dumare as well, as you were saying before. If I tell this that, you know, one verse, the trade in which one has knowledge of is the one that one will practice. That was the message for Babarinde, the one who prospered from setting traps for animals. He was advised to make sacrifice, and he complied. What I have versatility in doing is what I will be allowed to practice. Now here comes Babarinde, the one who prospered from setting traps for animals. You know, it's everybody has a role. Everybody has a role. And if you play the role, then people will be able to come in and partake of it with you. But if you don't play the role, then everybody is just complaining, or everyone's just, you know, standing around waiting. You know, and with that in mind, you know, I think the divine, you know, ordinance, the divine source of our natural gifts and talents gives us authorization to do it for the highest reason and purpose. And when people show up, sometimes here's something that people will sometimes slow down on. Well, I did it, and white people showed up. I won't sell this to white people. I won't share that with, you know, with people outside of X, or people who don't look like that, or people who don't say it this way. And although I think it is smart to know who you serve, you know, so that your focus is right and clear. But at the same time, you have to attend to who shows up. Don't use that as an excuse, in other words, to not perform or not produce, which is what a lot of times will stop a person from making that step or taking that chance. They edit themselves out of the whole book because they are afraid that the enemy is going to be reading the book, or the people who they don't like is going to be reading the book. No, forget about all that. You're not doing it for that. You're doing it because it's what you were born and ordained to do. Do it. And if, you know, one person shows up who you don't expect, and 10 people show up who you don't expect, that's not the point. The point is that when one person who is supposed to show up does show up, then you've done your job. When two people do show up who are meant to have what you are giving, then you have fulfilled your destiny. That's why you do it.
Baba, you hit on another issue, too, and that is we're very good at coming up with excuses and talking ourselves out of a good plan before we even get started.
Yep.
You know, we're already
looking
for what can happen and why I shouldn't even attempt this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We disqualify ourselves, and then, you know, we disqualify everybody else. You know, we become, when we look, when we become sort of another Stephen Covey. Covey says, be a beacon and not a critic, not a judge. Be a light and not a judge. You know, when we're judging, constantly judging, we're drawing all these conclusions about all the reasons why we have to say no, 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 no. And we do it to people outside of ourselves, our neighbors, our friends, other people who are trying to start something new, and then we do it to ourselves. Well, we do it to ourselves first, and that's why we're saying it to other people. We have to, you know, little by little, part of the work that I think we're doing and what we're trying to coax out of people in this particular conversation is, you know, say yes to yourself. Say yes to your vision. Say yes to your dream. Affirm that thing inside of you, that little itching, nagging something inside of you that says, I can do that. I know that I could do that. I see that. I know how to handle that. Affirm that. Say, yeah, do it. Do it. And if it doesn't work the first time, do it again. If it doesn't work the second time, do it again. Ask for some insight. Talk to people around you. Why didn't that work out? You know? But take that chance, and that's the only way that you're really going to be happy, quite honestly. When we boil it down to happiness and your well-being. Say again?
Be careful about talking to people around you now, because you want to talk to people who are going to feed the positive. You don't want to talk to people who are going to feed the negative and come up with reasons why you should stay where you are.
Yes.
And look at where they are when you start talking to folk. You know?
Yeah.
Try to look, you know, towards someone who might just be where you're trying to go. Or at least in a better place than where you are, you know, and get some support there. We're still trying to overcome that crabs in the barrel thing. And that was a hard lesson that I had to learn. I wanted to share every good moment in my life with every friend and family that I came across. And in the end, it turned out not to be a good thing. People are not always happy for you. People are not always happy to see you do what they think they cannot do for themselves, you know.
Yeah.
So I would be careful about who you share it with in terms of doing your research and getting some support. Suggests just that, someone that's going to lift you up, hold you up in your endeavor.
Yes.
Not help you look for, you know, the pitfall.
If I says that a matter that needs no comment, the best thing for you to do is keep mute. That was Ifa's declaration to Morinewa, the one that was going to a friend's house to become prosperous like the king of Ereke land. You know, behold, there are no relatives and all kin is absent. Let's make sacrifice to build community. And you know, that is exactly the twofold message that I hear you describing. That yeah, on one hand, some things you don't need to say, but we do need to sacrifice in order to build that community. You know, we have the things that we have to do, we have to give up in order for something bigger. Likewise, if I said that it's the intellectual who understands things, the thing, whatever is being done, is clear only to the doer. So everybody's not going to really understand the intricacies of what you're doing and why you're doing it. But it's with the trader that we discuss trade. If we want to buy cloth, we show it to the weaver. Moths don't argue with the one who lights and extinguishes light. Heaven does not argue with the stone thrower. You know, there's a place for everything, and everything is in its place. You consult with the proper people to get things done, which, you know, brings it back to other people who are actually successful in what they're doing. People who you want to actually serve, you know, it's kind of like that's your kind of market data. Hey, I want to sell this to, I'm trying to serve pregnant women. So I offer this, you know, help a drink to pregnant women and nobody took it. Well, let me talk to some pregnant women about why it didn't work and, you know, take that feedback and adjust from it. But yeah, talking to the general public, people who have never tried anything, people who never, you know, do what the spirit tells them. Those are the people who fall into the category of observers. You want to get in with the supporters, and if you're lucky, you want to get in with the people who are the doers. If you can get audience with the doers, then you're going to really get some quantum learning. And it's probably the best thing, if you're already on that track, the best thing is to find a way that you can serve the doers, right? How can I add value. That's the trim tab mentality. How can I find someone who's already on track, who's already in motion, and how can I use what I know and can do to serve that person and help that person in what they're doing? Why? Because that's how I'm going to learn. That's how I'm going to learn. When the Babalawo comes from Nigeria, I am there. Can I? Sure, I will hold this chicken. Sure, I will sweep this floor. Of course, I will. Whatever you need to have done, yes, I am happy to serve. Not just because, you know, this person is from Nigeria, but because, you know, this is someone who is going to add value to my knowledge and my experience. I'm going to learn. I'm going to serve, and I'm going to be able to actually also apply what I know. So case in point, there's an owl here, and I know he is extremely well-versed in the verses, in sacred text. So I say, hey, I know this verse. Let me chant it for you. Tell me. I understand it this way. Oh, no, you're not saying that right, Obafemi. This is the way it goes. And then he corrects me. You know, you're not saying that right, you know. So I have to humble myself and take the instruction because, well, it's enhancing my skills and it's empowering me and making me more certain of how I know what I know, you know. And the only reason I'm able to do that, well, one of the reasons I'm able to do that is because I know it's going to help me be better with the people who I serve. It's going to strengthen my position and make me a better servant. It's going to make me a better practitioner. So I'm gaining. And then the people who I serve, they're gaining. It's a beautiful cycle once we get into it and we start taking those little tiny steps.
Akshay, we do, as always, invite you to be a part of the conversation. Those who are with us now on the phone lines, those who are listening online at area code 347-215-8969. We do invite you to press the number 1 on your telephone keypad with your question, comment, or concern, and we will be more than happy to address you. We are going to take just a brief intermission. We will be forward momentarily with more of Ifa Wednesday here on Power Lunch with the Divine Prince and Baba Olufemi Orogunwa. All is truly and indeed a blessing. Ashe.
Any ally.
Tambo.
Ashay. Ashay, as always, we are humbled and honored by your continued support and participation of the Power Lunch, Voodoo New Orleans Voodoo Secrets and Recipes, and, of course, Ifa Wednesdays here with Baba Obafemio Orogunwa and the Divine Prince. I am going now to the phone lines, area code 604. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
It's Charlene, and I'm calling from BC, Canada, and I'm just getting a call in, so and I don't want to miss the information. May I call right back?
Sure, you most certainly can.
Okay,
we appreciate you.
All right, I'll call you right back. Thank you.
Sure. Yes, Baba, are you still with me?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I always appreciate your time and support and your continued efforts to be here with us and bring fruitful knowledge to the table every Wednesday here on Ifa Wednesday. I appreciate you.
It's always an honor and great fun. I enjoy being here and sharing with you and the people who listen and, you know, let me know, oh, I was listening. After the show, you know, I usually get an email or a text or something with somebody. Yeah, I was listening. Great show. Okay, that's good. I'm not going to pressure people to comment anymore.
Area code 623. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
This is Aloya Fayomi Sawade, Awareni Obafemi, and I'm calling from Phoenix, Arizona. How are you all today?
It just got better.
Oh, thank you. I was listening, and I have been enjoying the show with this short period of time between me and my clients. So I heard something that kind of piqued my interest a lot. But my question was, when we're dealing with such a wide community, especially here in the diaspora, and so many different levels of where they are when they come to Ifa and Orisha, what about the rules and regulations of Ifa and a hierarchy of people who they should go to when there are problems in terms of understanding those rules and regulations? You catching me?
Certainly do. And we're both going to comment. I always say, and I say it almost every show, no one who is truly practicing Ifa, Santeria, Lakomi, Voodoo is doing it in isolation. That's a critical sign in terms of who you're dealing with. If they cannot point you to, show you other people, elders, and not just elders, but a wide range of people in the community that are actively a part of that spiritual practice and process with them, I would be very, very skeptical in terms of dealing with them. Because as you're suggesting, there is a hierarchy. And there are rules. And there are traditions that have to be followed and adhered to. And when you're talking about, as you said, a diaspora who are at different levels of understanding, different levels of awareness, and then you have this ongoing thing between paths, which is a whole nother conversation, you know, how certain, you know, groups do it, you know, it affects the overall understanding, collective understanding of Ifa for everybody at the community level. So it's important that we have some guideposts in place. You know, I'm never going to be too big that I won't have elders, that I won't have godparents, that I won't have people who've been in the tradition longer than me, who've done more than me, that I can fall back on. And I do it all the time, not just here in the States, but as Baba suggested, I will get on Facebook in a heartbeat and go straight to Nigeria and start asking questions rather than
sort of go on my own ignorance or somebody else's ignorance, you know, and then get upset when we don't get optimum results, you know. Then we get offended, you know. Then we want to get personal, you know, and then that opens the doorway for a whole bunch of other mess to come in and affect the whole communal viewpoint of the tradition. We still have people who are in conflict between the church and Ifa, you know. So when they see certain behaviors mirrored, and I'm speaking my own experience now, when I saw certain behaviors mirrored within Ifa that I experienced in church, that was a problem for me. You know, I'm not trying to go back. I'm trying to move forward, you know, and into a completely different direction. So for me, in my response to what you had to say, you can't be in isolation. It's got to be other people that people can immediately lay their hand on who can say, yes, I know, they're legitimate, they've been through this, they've been through that. There has to be a level of what do they call that in the military, the chain of command?
The chain of command,
People in place to check that that things aren't being eroded and degraded and at the worst end of the spectrum, bastardized and abused. Because some of the abuse cases that are coming to me are just way beyond understanding. You know, some of the situations. Go ahead, beloved. Go ahead.
Sorry, Baba. I was getting ready to do one of my hallelujah moments here. Yeah, did I say? We have our hierarchy, both in Nigeria, and we're developing here in the diaspora. In the diaspora, when I'm talking about the diaspora, I'm not just talking about the United States. I'm talking about the full diaspora, African diaspora going from South America up, all the way through the Caribbean, all the way through to even Europe, okay? Because we have to include them in as well. Wherever African people went to spread this religion, going back as far as, 1504 when the first slave ships docked in Brazil? So we have to look at where we are evolving to. We come from different backgrounds, but many people are transitioning from one religious idea and system to another. And oftentimes they are bringing some of those ideas, and they're not bad or they're not wrong. I'm not saying one way or the other, but I'm saying that they also have to be open to the education that is prevalent and mandatory. And when we start talking about abuses, now we're talking about how do you present that problem and who do you present it to and what are the results that you are looking for. So, and that's important. If it is cases that are dealing with physical harm to an individual, I always tell people to give me a paper trail, meaning that you have, one, called the police, two, had everything documented, gone to hospitals to have things documented. If it is a physical abuse, if it is anything else, you still need to document dates and times, okay? And then if someone can't give you an answer about who to go to appropriately, there are others in the community, as you said, Facebook, even though some of the things I'm seeing on Facebook I'm finding real questionable right about now, because sometimes people take things to Facebook that should not be, especially if you're talking about a person's innocence or guilt. So, yeah, I'm a little iffy on that, but what's your thoughts on that again, too?
Well, I think it's a very important I guess it's an important set of systems that we have to develop, because when I look at it from a big picture, you know, when we open up the scope and we have all of the diaspora and we're all here, you know, more so than anywhere else in the world, which makes it very, it makes it the highest level of importance for us here in the United States, because, you know, everybody is here. Trinidadians, Brazilians, Haitians, Nigerians, Cubans, everybody's here. And everybody's got a different culture. So where the Cubans are coming from is not where the Venezuelans are coming from, is not where the Mexicans are coming from, is not where the Trinidadians are coming from. Everybody's got their own perspectives on, you know, what they need to do, what they consider right or wrong. It's very, very.
It runs up against cultural paradigms.
Yes, it gets tricky. Yeah.
But the common denominator here is Ifa for us, okay? And so whether we are traditionally made in Nigeria or whether we're made in the United States or Trinidad or wherever we're made, in terms of our initiations, there's a common foundation, and that foundation is Ifa. So we really need to start implementing more the rules, the hierarchy. See, even, you know, I came out of two traditions, and almost literally three. One Lukumi, the other being Oyetunji lineage, but then my whole lineage comes out of Ile-Ife.
So,
I'm a triple biracial child.
Yeah.
You know? And so I'm basically saying that, but we all come from the same root. The same root. So people forget that everything, even from the slave trade, that Maafa came out of K2 Nigeria, Benin.
Yeah.
Okay? We have these dynamics that we are forgetting, and we must be able to forward those things and give people a better understanding of the foundation of Ifa and the rules of Ifa, because often people tend to write their own laws, and you can't write a law for a foundational thing that's already there. It comes automatically into conflict. This is why elders are needed. This is why elders need to understand what it is that you're receiving. You receive so many different levels of understanding and initiation, okay?
Yeah.
And they don't know. They must not be afraid to say, I can't teach you this because, okay? Whatever that because may be, I don't know. I do know, but you are not ready for that at this time. And this is the reason why.
Right.
We have to be able to learn how to counsel correctly. And this is the problem that we're having. Because when I see stuff on Facebook, a priest being denigrated, deified, and things like that.
Yeah.
No one is stepping forward and saying, hold up, you don't do that.
Right.
That's
right.
Did this, you know, how do I know what your truth is? Did you come to an elder? Did you try to talk to somebody? Or did you just feel compelled to, you hurt my feelings, so I'm going to hurt you in the worst way?
Right.
I'm getting cases of people calling people's jobs.
With
this kind of person. So we have to be more responsible, more conscious of the things that we are allowing out here. And we are in, you know, fastly approaching that eldership stage, because the junior today is the elder of tomorrow. So what type of elder are you going to be? That's important.
Absolutely.
That's my concern. And, again, EFA is the foundation. And we have to be able to give people sound EFA information and advice that is predicated on peace.
I see.
Predicated on truth.
I see.
Okay?
So,
not the airhead stuff, but real truth. Sometimes it makes you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But you can deal with that if it's put in the proper perspective and you're allowed to process it and process it well. And that's the thing that we have to get across to our people because we're responsible now. It's on us.
You know, when I discovered the verse of Ifa that talked about the good condition, you're also with Woody, where Ifa said that, you know, we're here to bring about the good condition, to essentially balance heaven and earth and bring all of the blessings into one, you know, to embody it all in one place. It made my so much light in my spirit, and my heart was so happy because I found, oh, finally, okay, here is a North Star that we look to say, okay, look, whatever happens, whatever is said, whatever how you feel, look to this good condition as what Olivia Marty has said, that this is your mandate as a human being. And so whatever we're trying to resolve, whatever the problem is, if we continue to look to the good condition as our vision, then we will be negotiating for peace. We will be, you know, troubleshooting for the highest truth, and not just not just trying to outgun each other, you know, because that's the problem that it degenerates to. People just want to, the first one to call the other one is a liar is the winner. The first one to say this one is a cheater is the winner. The first, and it's like, well, we haven't, you blame people, you hurt this person's feelings, you defame that person, but we haven't taken it to a higher level. We haven't actually created a solution to the problem at hand. You know, we're not closer to the good condition as a result. And I think that one, for me, is very helpful in the case-by-case basis. But I think that collectively, if we can set an agenda, or we can set a vision more so than an agenda, that, hey, worldwide, let's all look to this as our guiding principle. We all agree that we are aspiring to this at the end of the day.
Right.
And that becomes, you know, the reference point. And we can just say, okay, hey, this, I'm not sure where you're going with this, but just real quick, help me see how this direction is helping us get to the good condition. If I can see that, then I'll be able to go with you. But if I can't see that, then it just looks like you're trying to attack this person, or you're just trying to save face or whatever. But you know what I mean? It becomes a good reference point for us. And then as we start to cultivate the capacity to build community and create those other kinds of eldership relationships, we at least have a reference point that will guide us on the right track.
I think, too, that the sister is saying is that when it's brought to the public, particularly when we talk about social networking, it not only erodes the parties involved, but it erodes the whole community because there are people sitting back in the cut observing this behavior. And they're wondering, what are we doing? You know, we have to take responsibility for the past. You know, and that, you know, I grew up in the church. You know, I'm not in a direct conflict with the church, but that is one of my issues with the church. It sort of has programmed us to sort of sit there and just be observer, as Baba said. And not really take responsibility for anything, because in the end, you know, it's all on Jesus. You know, I can't fix it, I can't hinder it, I can't help it, so I'm just not going to do nothing. And that leads to apathy within our community. And the internet provides a very special environment for that, where you have whole groupings now of people who would have otherwise been separate in their opinion, but are now in a place to project that opinion on other people. So they're down. They want you to be down. They don't see any light. They don't see any positivity. So when we bring this mess, you know, to the Facebook, to the MySpace, it only solidifies. It only gives, you know, another check mark to what they already believe, that all religions are bad, ain't no help in it, you know, that we wasting our time. And we re-solidify that by allowing those demonstrations to not only exist in a public forum, but as Iga said, to go unchecked, to not have anyone step up and say, okay, this is not right. This is, and this doesn't reflect Ifa, and to make that clear, because there's, you know, there are books, but there's no book, you know, that the general public can point to readily to get some answers to that, to get some clarification to that. You know, these were often oral traditions that were passed down orally. So, but now we're in a modern time with modern technologies, which brings a whole nother level to this.
It's absolutely correct and true. But we're still dealing with, Ifa is a binary system. The computer network and social networking are predicated on a binary system. We also have oral tradition, and what oral tradition does translate to is written word. So we have that power by focusing in on the information and the message that we give to people, as well as, even though oftentimes we are confronted as priests with the whole notion that what is this going to do to my temple, my organization, if I stand up for this, if I don't stand up for it, what's going to happen? This is a question, because then you are either a nosy body, you're just trying to start stuff. You know, you get all of those things. But see, I always look at the question, do I want to go to Oludamare in my time of transition with a lie on my lips? And that lie would be that I wasn't able to stand for the truth at a time when I was called to do so, okay?
Yeah.
So irregardless of whether, so I have tools. My tools are Oponi Fa, Opoeli, Ikin, Ibo, okay, Osu. I have all these tools that I'm more than capable of using. I know how. I was trained to do this. So my worries are foolish. I go to my Ifa. This is what I'm seeing. Baba, what do I do? And I cast, and I ask, and I do Ebba. Okay? And I don't worry about whether or not someone's going to call me a certain thing, because, see, the only one that I am responsible to is my Ifa.
Yeah.
So we have to get out of fear. And what is it going to do? It's going to do a lot. It's going to change the scope of how people see Ifa. And we have to get that across. We are the responsible ones. So if someone comes to me and they don't know, I'm going to do everything in my possible mind to give them the information. If I don't know something, I'm never afraid to say, I don't know, but I'll get back to you within 24 hours. Because I know where I can find information. Okay?
Right.
So we have to be able to be consciously responsible for our jobs as priests and as growing elders. I did the kitchen help. I was a good kitchen help. Okay?
Yeah.
I cleaned shrines, did all of that, because that was part of the learning process, not only of humility, okay, and submission, but the learning process of how to pray at shrines. See, what the word people are so afraid of is worship. We worship. We worship Ifa. Okay.
That's right.
We worship Ori, our greatest God, our own connection to Oludumare. We have to get back to this is a religious culture that is ancient, but it is still religious, spiritual culture.
Yeah.
And for people to understand what respect looks like. Okay? Some of the things that I see coming out of people's mouths in terms of Orisha is frightening. Okay?
Uh-huh.
They don't know that hierarchy. They don't know that presence. They don't understand the internal essence of that in their life. So how do you get there? You get them to get to their needs. They prostrate. They understand, and they see it work in their life. I can say this because Ifa works in my life. When I'm hungry, Ifa feeds me. When I'm sick, Ifa heals me. When I'm angry, Ifa cools me and calms me. Why? Because I go to my Ifa for everything. So we have to get back to getting people to, no matter what level they're at, to get to that space and place of understanding this is a worship. This is worthy to be respected, worthy to be praised. We want to get a good world, then we have to show them how. That's kind of where I'm at today. You know, I didn't mean to take up you all's time either, but I did, you know, I did see a need to speak on that too.
Well, we most certainly appreciate you. You're right in line with spirit. Baba and I have talked previously about the need for more female energy on the show. So I was going to allow you to talk as long as you wanted to talk. And I invite you to come back again and share with us because we need it. We need it. And part of the problem is people aren't stepping up and doing exactly what you're doing and what you did just today. And we certainly honor you for that.
Oh, thank you. I will try my best. Wednesdays are actually because I'm at work now. But they're actually my times for, you know, today, obviously, if I decided to keep my little client out of here for a minute. So that's, you know, and it's also our short day. So it was, I was able to come on. But I really do, you know, I have a passion for knowing that there is really good education and worship by medium that, you know, and your show is a medium for this. That you are bringing out good information on Ifa and the behaviors in our community. And that's a plus, you know, and that's doing what is divine. So I applaud you all for your show, and I will try and come back on, you know, if I don't have a little one in here, you know, but I will try.
I say. Well, we give thanks for your insight and your dedication. Yeah, I know that you are an institution and a pillar, and that you made time to share with us is a real blessing. And I certainly will say that I've been enriched by your contribution, and hope that whatever brought you here today will bring you back another time, and that as with everyone that what you shared with us, I'm certain that you'll also share with the people in your immediate circle, because that is I think what makes it real when we come together in these kind of forums, and then whatever the spirit moves us to and touches us with, and we take it back and keep the energy flowing in our in our circles of influence, then the work has been done and more people will be blessed.
Now, that's the main thing, is that they will be blessed and that we are going to grow as a community, world community, because we are global. We can no longer think of ourselves as, you know, as small pods. We are actually a world religion, and we are one of the fastest growing. And so that also means that we have to be extraordinarily conscious of the people that we are training and bringing up in this tradition, and the children. Part of my title as the Abia Awobaye and also as Yeye Agbomola is working with women and children, because every woman born can give birth to a Rumi. So that is the absolute amount of, you know, responsibility that this woman that carries this child, if this child is a Rumula born, what is she into this baby? What is she going to bring out in the world? If her mind is borderline personality disorder or bipolar, she got PTSD, she's passing that on to that baby. Okay?
Right.
And we will have children who are already geared toward destruction. So we got to be careful with our women and our children. And somebody's got to step up to that plate. Okay?
I see.
And so this is, you know, these are the areas that I would, you know, I'm supposed to be and I actually do work in. And it's about being able to bring the idea of Ifa as a worship to those who want it, okay? Those that want to break this bread and have a choice. Everybody has a choice to develop character into the best character, the best life, the best destiny that we can possibly give them through Ifa. And that's our job.
I see.
And that's what I'm praying for. And I will be one, as I know you all are, to do this job. And you're doing it, really. Doing it. So I'm grateful. I'm absolutely grateful for you all, and I applaud what you're doing. And anytime I'm able to get back and give comment, I will. Definitely. I'll just play football for the show, and I'm going to get off of here so I can get out of here and get my client.
Ashe. it never stops, does it? It never stops.
So I appreciate you all, and I will talk to you soon, okay?
Okay.
All right.
I'm actually going to turn off too. My phone is ringing right now because it's that time.
Okay. Well, I most certainly appreciate you and the both of you and all of our listeners. We are going to close the show out now. I am going to offer a poem on Congo Square by a master poet here in the city of New Orleans, Kalamu Ya Salam. And wish you divine peace and blessings, joy and prosperity, and invite you back with me tomorrow at high noon and always on Wednesdays for Ifa Wednesdays. All is truly and indeed a blessing. Ashe.
Ashe.
Congo Square. The Omus Indians prepared this place for us. Centuries before our arrival, a sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated, the Omus Indians prepared this place for us. Centuries before our arrival, Congo Square, a sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated, And as the colonizers came, our host, the Omas Indians, they pushed aside our host. The colonizers came and pushed aside our host and introduced us in chains. And by the late 1700s, we somehow, recognizing the sacredness of Les Places de Congo, we somehow, and the how of our somehow persuasive methodologies is not clear at this moment. The how is not clear. How our persuasive methodologies worked is not clear at this moment, but nevertheless, even as slaves, we crafted and created a space where we could be free to be we. And thusly we countered the sacrilegiousness of the French, giving great homage to our ancestors as well as giving praise and thanks to our red-blooded brothers and sisters. This is an oral libation toast to Congo Square, to Native Americans, to our ancestors who made a circle out of a square and gave us a way to stay ourselves, save ourselves from the transformatory ugliness of America, which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life, which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life and celebrates death with crosses and crosses, double and triple crosses, the middle passage, the first cross, Christianity, the double cross, and capitalism, the ultimate triple coup de grace cross of our captivity. But the terror of crosses notwithstanding, we sang, we beat, we be, we was, and is. Hail Congo Square, Congo, Congo Square. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated inside the beat of us. Inside the beat of us. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated inside the beat of us until we are ready to release them into a world that we recreate. A world heralded by the beat. Be, beat, being, beating, being of black heart drums. Heart beat. Heart beat. Heart beat.